So Psalm 75, and we'll begin, of course, in verse 1. We give thanks to you, O God. We give thanks, for your name is near. Men declare your wondrous works. When I select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity. The earth and all who dwell in it melt. It is I who have firmly set its pillars. Selah. I said to the boastful, do not boast, and to the wicked, do not lift up the horn. Do not lift up your horn on high. Do not speak with insolent pride. For not from the east, not from the west, nor from the desert comes exaltation. But God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another. For a cup is in the hand of the Lord, and the wine foams. It is well mixed, and he pours out of this. Surely all the wicked of the earth must drain and drink down its dregs. But as for me, I will declare it forever. I will sing praises to the God of Jacob. And all the horns of the wicked he will cut off, but the horns of the righteous will be lifted up. That last verse implies that the situation in the days of Asaph, and you'll note that he is the one who originated this psalm, so a little inscription that you might have above verse 1. But in the days of Asaph, I think it's readily to assume that righteous people were under the thumb of wicked people. Why would I say that? Because Asaph is saying, but as for me, I will declare forever, all the horns of the wicked he will cut off, but the horns of the righteous will be, and what's the last few words there? Be exalted or be lifted up. And that implies that righteous people are not lifted up presently in the days of Asaph. And so this makes this a very relevant psalm for us, in order to understand how we are to pray and how we are to view things when righteous people are not exalted in a nation. They are not exalted among the culture, among the kingdoms of this earth. And we'll note here, just as an introduction, that it starts out, if you notice, it says, for the choir director. Everybody see that little inscription there under Psalm 75? Do you have that? How many of you have that in your Bibles? Little inscription. Okay, some of you are still looking. Everybody see Psalm 75? You see the little title says Psalm 75? I know you have that. Okay. Anything under that psalm in your translation? Okay. Does it start off for the choir director or something to that effect? Okay. Does everybody see that? Okay. So here we have the inscription about this psalm. It says, for the choir director, set to Al-Tashith, a psalm of Asaph, a song. So we know the person who originated the words. We know that this psalm was meant to be sung. It is a song. And although you could sing it individually, it was meant for a choir. Okay? In other words, it was meant for a congregation of people. And if you just kind of take it a little bit out of the cultural setting in which the psalm originated, and think about God's people all gathered together, all in harmony, singing this psalm. In other words, it's not just meant for one individual person here or there. It's meant to be something that is harmonized among the people of God. Or as the New Testament would have, making melody in your Hearts, so all of our hearts, just applying it from a New Testament perspective, all of our hearts should not only be in agreement, we should be in total melodious harmony on what this psalm is saying and teaching. And so here you have, you can just think about a choir, perhaps at the beginning of a service there in the synagogue, and a choir singing this. Do you think that if you heard this psalm sung and the music was in agreement with the words, that it would make you happy? Well, it would if you understood what it was saying. Okay? And so here is what we want to see. So first of all, this psalm was meant to be sung, and it was meant to be sung by a choir. In other words, a choir has all the musical parts, right? So as to be harmonized, all in unity, all of God's people with the same spirit concerning the truths that are here in this psalm. Secondly, who wrote the psalm? Asaph wrote this song, and Asaph wrote, I forgot the exact number, I didn't look it up, I think there's 13 or so psalms in the books of Psalms that he wrote, and if you look at each one of them, what you will find is that Asaph lived in troublous times. And you'll recall one of the psalms that we did in which he said, I saw wicked people prosper, and my foot almost slipped until I went into the house of the Lord and understood their, you remember, understood their end. Okay, so here's a man who's looking at his nation, the nation of Israel, and we're taking that truth and just applying it for us today. Looking at that nation, wicked people are in charge, wicked people are prospering, wicked people are getting rich, righteous people aren't prospering. Okay, and that did not fall into agreement with his thoughts about God. And his foot almost slipped. But then, as he entered into the synagogue, the word of the Lord spoke to his heart, and he understood their end. So here is Asaph, a man living in troublous times. And here he wrote this psalm. And as you go down and read through here, you'll see, you kind of get the feeling that Asaph is wanting the Lord to do something in his day. Do you want the Lord to do something in our day? Okay, so we're there in agreement. Here's another thing that's here in this psalm, in the introductory inscription, and that is a Hebrew transliteration. Now, what I mean by transliteration, it's not a translation from the Hebrew. It's a transliteration where they take the consonants and turn them into English letters. And that is this phrase. Do you see this? Al Tashheth. Everybody see that? Okay. This is an interesting phrase, and to be honest, brethren, we don't really know what it means. Okay, and I went through several conservative and different along the sphere, along the spectrum of commentators, and we really aren't sure what it means. But where people tread to travel, I'll travel a little bit down this road, okay? So here, the words here, the word al, A-L, in the Hebrew is a prefix that is a negation. In other words, it means no or not. Okay? The other phrase that's transliterated, Tashheth, means destruction. So here's a psalm. It's for the choir director, and set to isn't in the Hebrew text, but they added that because just the way the other psalms are, it's set to some kind of musical thing that refers to do not what? Do not destroy. Okay, so that gives you a hint a little bit about this psalm. Now that phrase, that transliteration, is used in three other psalms. So I want you to turn there. I want you to turn to Psalm 57. We're just trying to set a little bit of the boundaries here on this psalm and introduce it. Psalm 57. And if you look in the subscription there, inscription, you'll see that transliteration there, and you'll see the word "set to," at least in the New American Standard, italicized, meaning it's supplied by our translators. And here are just some things that I find interesting in this psalm that might have a common theme. Look at verse 1. "Be gracious to me, O God, be gracious to me, for my soul takes refuge in you. And in the shadow of your wings, I will take refuge until what? Destruction passes by." Everybody see that? Okay, now look at verse 7 in that same psalm. "My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises." And so here, what you have, what do you have around the psalmist? Destruction. Okay, what about the psalmist himself? He is steadfast because his confidence is in who? The Lord. Okay, look over in Psalm 58. You'll see the same inscription. And I just want to go to the end of that. And it says, "The righteous will rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He will wash his feet in the blood of the wicked, and men will say, surely there is a reward for the righteous. Surely there is a God who judges on earth." And so here's the implication, is that God is taking vengeance on wicked people. That would be destruction, right? And yet the righteous, they will be vindicated because of God's judgments, and he will give praise to the Lord. Look in Psalm 59, the very next one. You got the same inscription. And again, I'm going to go to the last two verses where the psalm says, "But as for me, I will sing of your strength. Yes, I will joyfully sing of your loving kindness in the morning. For you have been my stronghold and a refuge in the day of my distress. Oh, my strength, I sing praises to you, for God is my stronghold, the God who shows me loving kindness." And if you read down through this psalm, what you have is wicked people doing things, and God, as a judge, stands up and he judges the situation and sends destruction. But the one who trusts in the Lord, God is his refuge and his stronghold. In the midst of all of that destruction, all that vengeance that is flowing around him. So all three of those psalms have the same thing. And when you look at Psalm 75, guess what you find in that psalm? You find the exact same thing. Look, just read verse 10 again. Well, verse 9 and 10. "But as for me, I will declare it forever. I will sing praises to the God of Jacob. And all the horns of the wicked, he will do what? He'll cut them off. And the horns of the righteous, God will lift up." So how do you cut off people? Well, that's God destroying, right? God removing, as it were, bringing calamity into the wicked people's life because they're prospering out there. And God, as it were, turns the table. So I think, I'm not exactly sure how you would use that, but all four of those psalms seem to be declarative that God destroys what kind of people? Wicked people, but he lifts up the righteous. Okay, in all four of those psalms. So in that case, when you're talking about a psalm, and if that is a common theme, and the inscription says no destruction, then who's that applying to? Not the wicked, but the righteous. What are the wicked trying to do? Destroy the righteous. Okay, so you kind of have that here as we go through. So here you have a psalm that is sang, set to whatever, do not destroy. Asaph wrote this psalm, and it is a song intended to be sung, and it is for a choir, for us to be in harmony and in unison about this as we go through. Okay, everybody with me on just that introduction there? You can get a lot from an inscription, can't you? Now, let me just give you some connections here that you may want to put in your Bibles that will help in our understanding. First of all, in verse 1 and in verses 6 through 10, you have the psalmist speaking, Asaph. And in verses 2 through 5, who do you think speaking there? The Lord is speaking. Everybody see that? So here we got the saints, or Asaph for the choir. We give thanks. We give thanks to you, O God. We give thanks, for your name is near. Men will declare your wondrous works. And then you go down in verse 6 where there's some application of what God says in verses 2 through 5. For, here's the reason, not from the east, not from the west, not from the desert or from the south comes exaltation. But God is a judge. He puts down one and exalts another. The cup is in the hand of the Lord. This is the saints. This is Asaph. This is the we that is talking. It's on the human level. What are the words that God says? Well, he says verses 2 through 5. You'll see it's a change from we, or a third person, to singular, I. So let's read verse 2. When I select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity. Now, is that Asaph? That's not Asaph. Okay, that is the Lord. So verse 2, I am the one that sets an appointed time. I am the one who judge with equity. The earth and all who dwell it melt. It is I who have firmly set its pillars. I said to the boastful, do not boast. I said to the wicked, do not lift up your horn. Do not lift up your horn on high. Do not speak with insolent pride. That's the Lord speaking to who? Wicked people. So here we have in our Bible, does our Bible have anything to say to wicked people? It does. And here is a direct God-breathed statement from the Creator, the one who is in the Most High, to wicked people who are boasting and who are trying very hard to set their horn, or they become the power brokers in the land. That's what the horn means. Their authority, their power is lifted up. And so here we have the saints, we, and then you have God who is speaking in the middle of that. Here's some other connections that you may want to make. And what I did in my Bible for that, I just drew a little line going down from verse 2 down through verse 5. I just drew a straight line down on the left-hand side of my margin, and I wrote Lord right there. So all I have to do when I look at that psalm, when I'm reading through my Bible, I look at that, I know immediately who's speaking and when and how in that psalm. Here are some other connections I have down in my Bible. First of all, you'll see in verse 4 this phrase, do not lift up the horn. Okay, everybody see that in verse 4? Okay, I have that underlined in my Bible. I have it underlined in red. I have different colors and I use those. Do not lift up the horn. What do you have in verse 10? All the horns of the wicked will be cut off. The wicked. Okay, so I've got that in red, so that just leaps out at me. Okay. So God is saying something to wicked people, and God is warning them, isn't he? Okay. Here's another thing, and I have this highlighted because this really is the point. And this is in verse 2. I have this highlighted. It is I who what? Judge. Everybody see that in verse 2? It is I who judge. Look down in verse 7. But God is the who? He's the judge. So you got 10 verses, and in two of those verses, just very plainly, God says, I am the judge. Asaph says, God is the judge. So what does he want us to understand about the Lord? Is he inactive on the earth? Is he just sitting back and kind of wound it up and got things going and he's just sitting back in the chair? No. He is the what? He's the judge. What do judges do? This is a trick question.
They judge.
They make decisions about cases. Right? And here the case is wicked people exalting themselves over the righteous. That's the case. So you have got it highlighted. Verse 2, it is I who judge. I have verse 7, God is the judge. And I have a couple of other things here. In verse 4, I have a line going from do not boast to verse 5, do not speak with insolent pride. That's the same thing, right? Different wording, same thing. And the Hebrew text does that often. It will repeat itself, or it will take a statement and the next statement amplifies what it has already said. And so God says to the boastful, do not boast. What does that mean? Verse 5, do not speak with insolent pride. And then this one's easy. You see again in verse 4, he says to the wicked, do not lift up the what? The horn. And I got a little line from do not lift up the horn to verse 5. Do not lift up your horn on high. So the Lord, what do we find out from those two verses? The Lord is warning wicked people not to do something. Not to boast and not to lift up their horn. Is God serious about this? He repeats it. And parents, when you did that with your children, okay, did you hear what I said? I said this. It's a warning, isn't it? He's trying to get the attention of wicked people. So here you have that connection here. We have another connection. Look down at verse 7. And you'll see this phrase. He puts down one and exalts another. So I got a little line drawn from he puts down to verse 10. He will cut off. Everybody see that? It's giving us an understanding of what he means when he says he puts down. What does that mean? Verse 10. He will cut off. And then in verse 7, he exalts another. And in verse 10, you have the horns of the righteous will be what? Lifted up. So if he says he exalts another, what does he mean? He means being lifted up. If he says he puts down one, what does that mean? That means people will be cut off. Okay, everybody see that? Okay, and I have lines here just so I can make those connections and I understand exactly what the Lord is defining what he's doing, isn't he? Okay, he's letting us know. And brethren, this is important because we typically really, you know, help ourselves when we say, as far as verse 6, that exaltation doesn't come from the east and comes from the west, but exaltation comes from who? The Lord. And we'll say, well, the Lord is the one who puts people in places. And we would be right about that. But that's not the emphasis this psalm is giving. Okay? He's going to take that general truth about our sovereign God, who is the judge, and that he puts down one and raises up another. Okay? What's the context? What's the contrast? Putting down, raising up. Wicked, righteous. Okay? And so he's showing you the scale here. And of course, in Asaph's day, it was the situation of troublous times when the wicked were in exalted places in the land. Were there wicked people in the land when Jesus came? Yes. There were wicked people in the Sanhedrin, wasn't there? There were wicked people in Rome. Are there wicked people today? Are they trying to get into high places? Yes. Are they in many cases in high places? The answer to that is yes. Do you feel like the righteous are becoming fewer and fewer? Yes. Okay. Well, brethren, we could say this, and I'm not saying exactly, but you and I are living in the same kind of days Asaph was living. And he had to comfort and strengthen his heart. Doesn't your heart need to be strengthened in these days when you pick up the newspaper or the internet, right? And so this passage really helps us to have a stabilizing factor. And the reason why I'm using stabilizing factor is because of what he says in verse 3. God says, "The earth and all who dwell in it melt. It is I who have firmly set its," what? Pillars. Now folks, when you talk about pillars, okay, and you say those pillars are firmly set, you're talking about stability in the midst of a time when the earth is being shaken, right? If the earth is being shaken, if a nation is being shaken, if a people are being shaken, what do you need? Stability. Okay, and this is our stabilizing factor. And it is this, folks. It is God, but not just anything about God, but that he is a judge. I've said this many, many, many times. I'll say it again. Nobody gets away with anything. Wicked people think they're getting away. Right? What's our stabilizing factor? They won't get away. Right? You're all worried. We're all worried. In some cases, I might even say, there's a good aspect to that, right? But we're all concerned. We're all shook on the inside. Doesn't God see? Doesn't he know? Isn't he doing anything? He is. Folks, just because you may not see it with your physical eyes doesn't mean that God is asleep. We'll study in Psalm 40 in preparation for the Lord's table, and it says, do you realize this? God doesn't get tired. So why do you think he's asleep? Now, we don't word it that way. We say, well, God, you're not doing anything. Well, that's what sleeping people are doing. Nothing. Unless it's me, I'm snoring. But in any case, that's what sleeping people are. They're not doing anything. Folks, God doesn't sleep. God doesn't get tired. He doesn't even get weary. Does he see? Does he know? Then lift up your eyes on high. Let him be your peace and a rock in these days that trouble us. It's the only way you're going to get through. Righteous people do that. And not only that, But righteous people anticipate God doing that. How can I say that? Look at verse 1. What are we doing? We're giving thanks to you, O God. We give thanks to you. Why? Your name is near. Why do we do that? We're going to declare your wondrous works. Now, folks, answer me this. In this psalm, what are his wondrous works? His judging. His cutting off the wicked and lifting up who? The righteous. The wicked will be no more one day. And folks, it is entirely, we're not to rejoice at the downfall of the wicked in the sense of, well, you got it coming to you. That's not why we're here. But we are rejoiced when we see God do something. And He is working all over this globe. And may God give to you, it's my intention, this psalm's intention, may God give to you stability in your inner man. You might have to say to yourself every time you read the paper, God is the judge. God will cast down the wicked. You might have to, you ever talk to yourself that way? Righteous people talk to themselves that way. And sometimes I give myself a good solid rebuke. Because I'm not thinking God's thoughts. And folks, when we're not thinking God's thoughts, you know what leaves? Our peace. And our stability. So let's go to Him in prayer.